Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio and together partners at Amity Kett. Hello. Today we are going to talk about kitchens. Everyone loves to talk about kitchens. We're going to talk about open plan versus closed plan, how the open plan came about.
History of kitchens, what we love about kitchens, what drives us crazy about kitchens and kitchen design.
All the kind of details of laying out a kitchen, from cabinets, countertops, faucets, and we'll touch probably on some pantries.
Lighting,
for sure.
Airflow. I feel like a huge part of what we do ends up circling around kitchens and kitchen design because it has become such a major part of the open plan that's popular. And it seems to be a place that people like to spend their money to on budgets is in those kitchens.
And I think, you know, a lot of people like to cook now. There's, some, you know, the Food Network and more people are cooking and enjoying cooking than I think they did before.
Yes, and sometimes they just want a kitchen for show.
Yep.
And they get takeout and heat it up. So All of those things. So starting with the history of the kitchen, I'll just jump in real quick to say I've written a few blogs and articles about it. You know, there's a long history of the kitchen design following society's changes in society. The way that people in the past used to have servants that lived in their homes, and those servants would work out of the kitchen. Of course, depending on what socioeconomic level you were at, they would be in the kitchen working and not necessarily connected to the rest of the house. There would be a door or some sort of a passage that kept that separate.
Yeah, which wasn't very fair to that person.
Or maybe they didn't want to be around the family and that was fine.
Oh, yeah.
And they even used to sleep in the kitchens. There was sleeping spaces in the people for the people who worked in the homes. And we've all seen Downton Abbey with a kitchen on a whole other floor. And those are things that kind of are in our past. That's where kitchens, first they weren't even attached to the house, and then they became attached to the house. And sometimes they were downstairs versus upstairs for fire hazard reasons. And then they eventually evolved into being a place where the main sort of homemaker in the house would work.
Yeah, kind of, I guess, more houses in the middle class grew. There was fewer servants with the design of houses. You didn't necessarily always have a servant anymore helping. And so somehow that led to the woman being in charge of mostly doing all the kitchen duty, cooking, cleaning.
After, in the 30s, 40s, and then even more after the war, kitchen development design became kind of fundamental to who we saw ourselves as is, you know, the middle class was gaining in prominence and America was on the rise and kitchens became a big advertising moment. And there was a lot of different appliances that were developed. And so all of this changes the way the kitchen ends up getting laid out.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to think about. I mean, we had this, if you think about the 1920s and 30s Sears kit houses, they had really tiny kitchens. And some of those houses were even still designed for a servant. There might be a little servant's room off of the kitchen. And then as you start to look at some of the 50s houses, post-war boom, the servants' quarters really just got taken off. And then there was still a separate kitchen. And then as the 60s and 70s came evolving, the houses started to have a little bit more with the open family room kitchen. But there's always seems to be the big hanging cabinets in your way.
Yeah, there's a header. I also always think about Bewitched, that show Bewitched that I used to watch as a kid, and the way that their kitchen was set up where there were bifold doors at countertop level that that could shut off and you could be connected to the dining, or you could have a private area in the kitchen to sit and have a cup of coffee if you were the homemaker.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So kind of the evolution of the kitchen. So now today we have really big open kitchens and almost, you know, trophy kitchens. So just the way life evolves and what kind of becomes on trend as well.
I think that farmhouse kitchens are, to me, a good thing to look back at and think about because they worked differently because farmers would often eat in the kitchen. The family would eat in the kitchen. The kitchen would still be somewhat separate from the rest of the house. Maybe it had a back swinging door and windows so you could have good airflow. And Diane, you were talking about they would do other activities besides just cooking in those kitchens.
Yeah. So it was, you know, they'd have a big, large kitchen table in the middle. And the idea was more of a communal hearth is the kitchen. So you'd have perimeter countertops where you can be cooking and prepping stuff, and multiple people might be doing that. And then you have a big, large table right in the middle, and people might be sitting there playing cards, reading, just talking. And then another thing that's nice is maybe there's a couple upholstered chairs or a settee over in the corner as well. And so that just kind of creates more of a communal aspect, and the person doing all that cooking doesn't feel like they're locked in this separate room.
And isolated, right. And then now, as Diane was saying, we have more of the open plan where we've given way to more connection with the kitchen being open to completely to the rest of the house. You can see the sink from the front door. You can watch your kids playing from every angle in the kitchen because they're playing in the living room or the playroom. Or people have become much more interested in having their kitchen be the still the hearth of the home. But what that does, in my opinion, to the kitchen is put a lot of demands on it to look fantastic and to really absorb a lot of that budget when you're refinishing your kitchen. Because if it's something everyone's going to see, you're going to want to put some money into it, make it beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So also just going back to the farmhouse kitchen and going back to our book of pattern language, they talk about how cooking is a chore and eating is a pleasure mentality, and trying to, you know, I think that that was how it was seen. And now, like with the open kitchen, I don't feel like it's necessarily seen like that anymore, because, again, a lot of people like to cook. And so now people, you know, have pleasure out of cooking as well as eating. Or maybe they cook it and then they don't feel like eating it. Some people are like mm-hmm. that. But.
Yeah. And then we also have a trend, Diane and I have seen, with clients wanting a dirty kitchen or a scullery or a butler's pantry, some place where they can have their larger appliances that aren't quite as attractive, or an additional sink so they have a spot for cleanup after parties or dinners. And they want to keep their main kitchen looking sparkling all the time, or at least when they're having more formal events in their home. So we've got that secondary kitchen. So now you're building not just a main kitchen, but a second kitchen storage area, which does harken back to another time when cooking was different. So I think that's an interesting aspect that's come up in recent years.
Yeah, we've designed a lot of sculleries. And what's great about the scullery is also if you have caterers, or they can be working in the scullery and making a mess and doing everything they need to do, and then coming out and serving and kind of using the kitchen as a serving area.
So do you think, Diane, that that idea we were talking about earlier about the farmhouse table gave way to the obsession with kitchen islands? Because people do tend to like to sit at their kitchen islands and play cards and do crafts while everybody's in the kitchen.
Yeah, a lot of times we with our clients, we'll say, well, this is where my daughters do their homework, or, you know, my son sits and actually does game or talk on, you know, is on his iPad or whatever, even though it's he's doing something, you know, something that we're all saying, oh, we hate that they do it. But they're still doing it right near you and not running away.
It's connection.
And it was funny because I had some clients who I did a house for, and we added the island, and it was a whole big new addition. And we had an island, and something we'll get into a little bit later in this podcast was whether to put the sink in it or not. And so we ended up not. And then she referred to it as the magic island, because all of a sudden her son and his friends would come and sit and talk. And even though she's still there doing stuff, it was as if she wasn't there, so she could hear everything that they were
saying. She got all the gossip.
Instead of before, she had a house where the kitchen was tucked away and she never got to know what was really being said or going on. And so she called it the magic island. So, yeah, all kinds of things happen when you create that communal space as well, whether it's the farmhouse kitchen or more an open kitchen with the island.
Yeah, and Diane knows I have a pet peeve about a couple things related to islands, which is when people have the chairs lined up next to each other on the other side of the island facing into the kitchen, maybe four or five chairs all sitting side by side in a row. I like when, and oftentimes we'll design islands where the seating for the people in the space is actually at the one of the ends of the island. It just gives for a little bit more of an intimate connection at the corner for people, two people to sit side by side. And also just thinking through what view you want. You know, you don't want to build a kitchen that faces your prettiest view in your house and then position the chair so your back is to the view all the time. So mm-hmm. that's a big thing to think about when you're designing kitchens. I would love to see a hearkening back to that farmhouse kitchen where there is some connection, sort of the slight connection, maybe some sort of a passage or an opening from the kitchen to the main room, but also, as you mentioned earlier, having a pair of chairs or a settee or a banquette or something in the kitchen where it becomes kitchen slash family hangout room, but it's not maybe the most dominant thing in the house. And I mostly say that because it'd be nice for people to be able to spend time on their more formal areas and do more things such as wallpaper or upholstered furniture or versus the kitchen sucking up all the budget.
Yeah, the kitchen often does, especially, you know, we have these trophy kitchens and then you don't have any money left really for the living room and dining area. And you spend it all in this amazing kitchen.
It's amazing. It's something you think about.
So. But sometimes people are there all the time and then they just love it. So, so we could also start to talk a little bit more about kitchen design. So talking about the farmhouse kitchen with all the perimeter counters. So thinking about how you lay out a kitchen. So you've kind of got perimeter walls. So is it an interior wall, an exterior wall? Are you going to have windows on those walls? What do you want to be looking at? Do you put a sink there or is the cooktop there so you can do a beautiful vent hood backsplash piece? Now, everyone is so different. I've got people that love to have the cooktop in the island because they're cooking and they want all their people that they're cooking for hanging out right in front of them. To me, I get a little nervous. Grease might get splattered, but they just really like that idea. You also then have to deal with the vent hood issue, either hanging over top of the island, which kind of can feel like this big Klingon warship, right, hanging over your head.
Definitely.
I mean, there are some nicer, lighter ones that are thinner. Or there's the downdraft ones, but a lot of times people don't really care for those. And if it's gas, sometimes it tends to pull the gas flames towards that when you're using it. So I don't always have that many positive reviews.
They don't function quite as well. I will say that there's, you know, of course, well, not now, but always, there's induction cooktops. Those cook a little cleaner. They're not quite as messy. So when we have recently been doing cooktops in islands, we have been doing induction because it's a little bit cleaner than a gas cooker. But I do know that people really get real romantic about the idea of having their cooktop in the island or whatever it is so that they can serve pancakes to the kids. It's that sort of drama of everyone watching you cook. And that is fun for people.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to think about how do you draft it. And that can limit things a little bit.
Yeah. And then, of course, so if you put it on the wall opposite the island, so then you would have your back to them if they're sitting at the island. Although now let's say we're able to do that corner seating at the end, then you don't necessarily have your back to them because it's kind of coming around the corner.
Yeah. Or if maybe you spend all your time washing dishes or at the sink and maybe that's where you spend most of your time. And then you want the sink in the island. So that's facing out.
Although then there's the messy sink user and people talk about that and they, you know, splash everywhere and they don't want dirty dishes sitting there because no one ever goes and dries them and they just sit there and people pile dirty dishes there and then everyone sees it. So there's all these are all the things we talk about in our design meetings and everybody is different.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time, me personally, I like to have nothing in the island. I like to have the sink, if you can, at a window on the perimeter and then the cooktop behind you so that then there's nothing in your way and you have this great amount of workspace. Because that's another thing to think about in your kitchen is how much workspace do you want?
Yeah, I mean, people sit at their islands for everything. So maybe it's nice to be able to stand at one end and chop your salad fixins, and then another person literally sitting doing their homework and another person sitting next to them checking their emails and another person, you know, so using that, having that space just for prep and all clean, or for crafts, working on crafts, sort of that farmhouse table thing all over again, mm-hmm. playing cards without any interruption of anything messy in front of it. I agree with that. I also really like when island countertops are something like stained wood, some sort of material that's a little bit
more table-like.
Kind of, yeah, mm-hmm. more table-like and a little softer and quieter, or just versus everything being hard surfaces. So that's another thing to think about. One more thing I'll say that we like to do with islands that's kind of fun is if you have an opportunity to break up what materials you're going to use on them, and at one end maybe you have marble slab, and then at the other you've got wood, stained wood. So then you have a space to make your pie crusts or for your baking. So anyway, those big islands provide for a lot of different material use, which I think is fun.
Yeah, if you're a baker, there's a whole nother conversation on that about making sure you have the area for doing all your baking at. And also then, so sometimes you might, in that island, maybe you have your main sink on the periphery, but you wanted a little vegetable prep sink. So the other thing is, how many sous chefs do you have in your kitchen with you? You know, sometimes there might be two or three. I know in our kitchen, a lot of times we end up with lots of sous chefs, and it's somebody peeling potatoes on one end, someone's rinsing vegetables, someone's chopping an onion, someone else is working on all the herbs, and someone's prepping the meat. And so you can have a whole plethora of sous chefs in there. And so making sure that they're not bumping into each other and knocking everything out of their hands is also something to think about.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times we measure people. Okay, bend over. We're going to measure the length of your back when you're bending over to make sure you're not going to butt against the person standing behind you. And, mm-hmm. and there are standards that you follow, and there's rules that you want to follow when you're designing a kitchen. They're really more like guidelines and, you know, for usability. And then, but each person is different. So you spend a lot of time, because there's so much that happens in a kitchen, thinking that detail through very thoroughly.
Yeah. So you typically want 4 feet between islands or counters, just because otherwise you end up with an extra step in between, which can be frustrating when you're turning and going back and forth between maybe your cooktop and your work surface. And so that is kind of our guideline. Sometimes we go a little less, sometimes a little more. And many times we are mocking stuff up on site, mm-hmm. right? We'll mm-hmm. tape out the island or draw it on the floor and the periphery cabinets so everyone can feel it. I had one client one time where we had the island designed and the husband said, well, we'll just call it Oahu. I said, what? He said, Oahu, like a giant island. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, yeah, okay. So, but it fits the space. And for everything you all are telling me is going to happen here, that's what I felt like we needed. And so anyway, they decided, well, we want to shrink it. So I said, okay. So we shrank it. And then as we were building, we went and taped it out on site. And the wife walked in and said, oh, no, that's too small. Well, look how far apart my countertops are. And so then we ended up going back to what we had originally designed, the Oahu.
Yeah, you got to scale it right. So the other thing to think about in kitchens, Diane mentioned, is open shelves or closed shelves, cabinets with doors or open shelves. And that's another thing we end up talking about in those design meetings, because a lot of times people will see images of kitchens with open shelving, which kind of just makes them feel lighter and fresher and more open and not as heavy on top. But then there's the reality of how do you maintain those shelves in a kitchen where it might get sticky, might get a little bit of oil spray or dusty. So I don't know. How do you guide people with that one, Diane?
Yeah. So I usually talk to them about, well, what do you want to put on there? You know, I've had some people that love the open shelves because they constantly want to see all their dishes and pots and pans, and they just want to grab them, and they're using them all the time, so it's not getting dusty and dirty. And then I've got some people that just want to decorate. Well, you got to make sure you dust a lot if you want to do that. And then also if you're going and reaching and using a lot, we need to make sure the height is good. And then when I've got some people where more it's kind of like just decorative. I had a woman who had a collection of these chickens, and we didn't do a large group of shelves, but just a small grouping of shelves. And it looked really nice with the cool little chicken.
Yeah, it looks good. It's just a bit of a commitment. You know, it's like when we build bookcases or something, oftentimes clients will say to us, I need it decorated now. And so what do we put there? So it's just something to think about is if you're going to use it all the time, it's a great idea.
Well, sometimes I'll propose some open shelves and someone will say, well, what am I going to put there? And I'll say, Amity will figure
it
out for you.
Got to hire an interior designer. So then another big part of what we talk about with kitchens is storage, because we're talking about shelves here. So now we have to think about upper cabinets, lower cabinets, drawers versus doors, pullouts, appliance garages. And then how do you design your pantry? I know some people want a pantry with a work surface in it. And they use the same countertop material they have in there on their island, perhaps. And that's another kind of area where they go in. Maybe they keep their Vitamix in there.
And those are great. And whenever I lay out a pantry off the kitchen, I always create at least some sort of smaller countertop that's maybe 2 foot by 4 foot where you can keep your Vitamix, or maybe it's even the coffee or anything like that that you use a lot, but you don't want to have to keep putting it away, kind of like we're talking about keeping the pretty kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Or so like your toaster oven.
Yeah.
Or your microwave if only you only use it for microwave popcorn. Or mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is a great spot to put mm-hmm. it. We actually just designed a cabinet for a client that's a kind of floor to ceiling. And on each of the shelves, it then has a pullout and it's all of her different countertop appliances. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited to see how that turns out. We're just in the process.
Yeah, you can put electrical in there wherever you want it so that you can plug in whatever you need to plug in and leave it plugged in,
mm-hmm.
which I think is great.
And then that's been a lot of measuring mm-hmm. of, okay, well, here's where this appliance is. And if you pull it out, how is it for reaching in there? Well, it's a top down. Do you put it in the top? You know, so there's a lot of conversations there about each of those appliances. And then there's also the appliance garages we sometimes do on counters, which work out really great. Sometimes it's hidden in the corner next to like a stack of ovens because you have that dead corner. And recently we just did one where then we had a pull-out tray, which sat on top of the countertop. So then you pull that out so it's easier to even access. And then it has the door to close and hide everything. You have a really cool one in your kitchen.
I do. Mine's a timber door. It goes like those old secretaries, which I really love. So I can close off my microwave and not have to look at it. Sometimes the only piece I get when my kitchen is not quite perfect is just closing that one timber door so I don't have to look at my microwave. This is very pleasant. But I also think in all these little nooks and crannies, you want to think about things like spices and knives and what you use most often. I know Diane and I are designing for someone who wanted open shelves that could be accessible from the cooktop, so that they could have the simple bowls they use all the time or the simple things they use all the time right at their reach when they turned around from the cooktop to the island. Mm-hmm. And we finished out the interior of those cabinets a little bit differently than we did the rest of the island. Those have a walnut finish versus a painted finish. So really thinking that through in a way that makes it so pleasant to be in your kitchen. Just you don't have to think, you just function, and it just works. And then it can be easy to maintain, easy to be clean, easy to cook in, but it takes a lot of noodling.
It's a lot of time and effort thinking and talking with you about how you cook and how you like to be in your kitchen and how everyone interacts with the kitchen.
And a big part of it, too, is lighting. I know that we all need to think about it in all of our rooms. Ambient lighting for beauty and for peace and serenity, for how nice it's going to look. So maybe some island pendants that are on a dimmer or some under cabinet lights that kind of run under the areas where you might want to use it almost as a nightlight at night. Or and then you need task lights that you can pull up, make as bright as possible so you can actually see what you're doing when you're prepping and cleaning.
Yeah, lighting is so tricky in a kitchen because you really need it to be as bright as possible so you can see everything, because nothing infuriates me more than when I can't see something. But then you don't need all that on. You don't need the airplane runway when you go sit down to eat. You know, you turn everything off and then you want the mood lighting, right? Mm-hmm. And so then, yeah, the under cabinet lighting and having things on dimmers is totally important for that. And then everyone's different about what they want. I mean, you have the island for the task lighting, or let's say in the farmhouse kitchen, Amity, thinking about that chandelier that might go over that dining table, that, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. thinking mm-hmm. about because then you would need task lighting and ambient lighting.
Yeah, and I will say that one of the reasons I keep advocating for slightly more closed off kitchens is this exact thing where we're trying to light both in this one project that we're working on. We're trying to light both an island, a bar, all connected, as well as the living room and dining room, all really in the same space and in the same, you know, in the same room. And we've got the windows. We have to think about the window and the light coming in there. And then we've got the can lights that come down from the ceiling for when you're cooking and cleaning and you need to really be able to see. And then we've got the ambient lighting for the mood. And then we've got some under cabinet lights to really accentuate corners and things so nothing's hidden, and also to be used as a nightlight. And we've got wall sconces in the dining room. And then we've got to find a pendant that goes over the dining table that doesn't compete with the pendants in the kitchen. They have to play nicely together and work together. And then the sconces also have to work together. So it's demanding. It's just a demanding thing. And I'm on board and I like doing it and it's fun, but it's so, it's really a big brain activity to figure out how everything, including the wallpaper and the paint, when everything's connected, you really have to think those things through, because you can't have a kitchen that's brightly lit and very white and clinical looking, open next to a dark, moody dining room. If it's open, it doesn't work.
Right.
The light just doesn't work. So really everything has to speak really nicely and carefully together. Whereas if you do have a little bit more closed off space, you can have very different feeling spaces. And, you know, the whole house still needs to work together cohesively, but gives you a little bit more flexibility. But again, you know, everybody's different. I haven't run into anybody who really wants a separate kitchen in a long time. Everybody really likes that connectivity. Do you see that too, Diane?
Yeah, I see that. But then I do also see where people want it to feel not as connected. And so a lot of times we'll do kind of a cased opening, like a big, you know, like a thicker wall, like maybe it's 1 foot wide and it's got an arch or a squared off mm-hmm. opening. And so the kitchen still feels separate, but you can still go put an eyeball on somebody in the dining or living area.
Yeah. And then let's think about materials too, because I know recently we were working on a project and the question became, how does the floor change from one room to another when there's no walls at that? Mm-hmm. That spot. So sometimes people want, you know, hardwood floors, engineered wood floors throughout their house, but they think they might want tile in their kitchen so that they can clean it more easily. There are obviously more spills potential in the kitchen. But then how do you stop one floor and start another one if you don't have a separation, some walls? So it just has to be thought through. It can be done. It can be done beautifully, but it's not, it has to be carefully thought out mm-hmm. and designed.
Right. Oh, and also when talking about lighting, it made me think about the plug strips, because a mm-hmm. lot of times you don't realize, you know, back in the 20s and 30s houses, you'd have one outlet in the kitchen. And I mean, I remember when I've rented those houses and you plug stuff in and you're using two or three things at once and the whole power to the house goes off. So then when you get to be in a more modern kitchen, you're so excited you have all these outlets, but then you go put them in a pretty backsplash and then it's wah wah.
Mm-hmm.
So the great thing is you can have the plug strips under the upper cabinets or even upper shelves, so you can hide them and then you can plug stuff up.
Yeah, they
there.
Get embedded into the cabinets, like a strip set up into the cabinet, so you can't see them at eye level at all, but you can every 6 inches or something, you can mm-hmm. plug something in. You see the cords going up. So every once in a while, we'll make sure that we place an outlet behind on the backsplash wall anywhere there's going to be something plugged in permanently so you don't see that cord. So that's another thing we have to talk about and think about. How do you function? Do you have to have your coffee maker right there? Does it have to be plugged in always? Because you're not going to want to see the cord going up. Is the appliance you're using being plugged in part-time? And it's just down sometimes and you don't mind. Maybe it's just Thanksgiving or Christmas. It's your mixer. You can plug it in and then put it away. Or do you want a permanent spot for it? And like Diane said, oftentimes with these kitchens, we're really spending the money on some beautiful backsplash materials.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's even a slab material where the countertop slab goes all the way up. And you don't want to cut into that every, you know, to code wherever you need outlets.
Yeah, and there's another tricky code one where you need outlets within 2 feet of the center of the sink. And a lot of times we usually have lots of windows there and we don't have a return. And so some of the solutions have been these pop-up outlets that are in the countertop.
Or you can sometimes put the outlets in the cabinets themselves.
Yeah, and it just varies by city as to what they'll allow on that with cords. Mm-hmm. They're very – some of them get really upset that they don't want any cords mm-hmm. dangling anywhere, coming around anywhere.
Pesky wanting to keep you alive and keep the house from burning down.
I know, but I still don't quite understand the true reason to have these outlets either side of the sink.
Yeah.
And some of them can be real sticklers about it.
Yep. And switches. You have to think about switches.
Yeah, know. Switches as well is another good one.
Yeah, you kind of have to find a place to hide those tucked in a corner maybe or in a cabinet. It's kind of not always a bad thing to just put it in the side of a cabinet if you mm-hmm. can. Because, again, we don't want to mess up our beautiful visual line in the
yeah.
kitchen.
Oh, and another thing is if we wanted glass front cabinets, you know, sometimes when we're talking about open shelves and the cleanliness, if it gets dirty or sticky, then we'll go to glass front cabinets with people.
Yeah, and there's a lot of exciting things you can do with cabinets. That way you can do glass front, you could do frosted glass front, you could do seeded glass, you could do, you know, sea spray was one of the finishes for glass, or you can do
the wire mesh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Metal mesh or caning. We're doing a kitchen right now with some caning in the cabinets mm-hmm. in the mudroom and then, or some rush panels, that kind of thing. All these decorative options are exciting. They make a kitchen more approachable, I think, less clinical,
yeah.
warmer.
Uh huh. A little bit like, more materiality.
Yeah,
is
more
that a word?
More materiality. It is a word. Yeah. And just more something that you want to really interact with. I have a friend who just renovated her kitchen and she really wanted a very clinical looking kitchen, meaning a space that's white and crisp and clean and easy to see all the dirt on. And
oh my gosh.
Often the opposite of what people want.
You know? I know.
She wanted all white. And it just took every bit of convincing that I had in me to get her to do a different color for the cabinets so that those are not all white. But I will say she loves to clean. So if you love
oh,
to clean.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And she's very happy doing it.
Makes her very happy. She even uses special wipes on her stainless steel, which you need when you have stainless mm-hmm. steel. It does show fingerprints. So having a special cleaner for your
there
stainless
are some
steel.
Stainless steel refrigerator products where for some reason, I don't know what they do. I haven't asked or found out why the fingerprints don't show.
Yeah, they put a film. They put a film over
them. Just a film.
Okay. Yeah, they put a film over them.
Oh, you know what else we could talk about is paneling your appliances to make them disappear.
Okay,
that's
everybody,
always fun.
Everybody, leave the room. I'm so excited. This is my favorite topic. Okay, please. No, I just really am not a fan of stainless steel refrigerators. Just saying. In certain kitchens, they're great. If you're a real hardcore chef and you want that restaurant look, go for it. But mostly I think they're hard to keep clean and they scratch. And I like when the kitchen cabinets are match what is paneled on the front of the refrigerator. So panel-ready appliances is what I typically promote. And I don't care if they're painted or they're stained wood or they're their own special fancy thing. I don't know what my thing is, but I just really love that when the kitchen feels really cohesive and the panels on the front of the appliances as much as possible, especially the refrigerator, match the cabinets. It just tends to give a cleaner, less broken up look and it can feel traditional. It can feel contemporary. It can feel mid-century modern. There's all sorts of different ways it can kind of come together, but
yeah, I agree. I think you can do it to the dishwasher, too.
Dishwasher, you can do it to some. You can't do it to beverage fridges, although some of them have it anyway.
Usually those are mostly glass-fronted mm-hmm. anyway. Ice makers. So, yeah, definitely.
Something to think about.
Is great.
It can make the kitchen feel bigger, too, and just because it doesn't have as many broken-up materials within mm-hmm. it. And then one more thing I think we should bring up, which is counter-depth refrigerators.
Oh, yeah, talking about appliances.
So when it comes to appliances, which I think we should have a whole separate podcast about because it is mm-hmm. such an important thing, but counter-depth refrigerators are really a great invention. They don't have less interior space than standard depth. That is a common misconception. They're taller, though. That's why they have more volume inside or the same volume inside. And then they don't project too far into your kitchen because we've all been in those kitchens where it looks like somebody landed a plane in the middle of the kitchen because the refrigerator projects out a foot beyond the cabinet. So consider a counter-depth refrigerator, I would say, even if you're not going to do panel ready, just because it'll give you more space in the kitchen and give you the same amount of space on the interior. So.
So when I remodeled my kitchen, I got rid of that airplane that had landed, and I got a counter depth, and we were a little bit worried. It actually, cubic feet-wise, did have a little less. However, it was much more efficient in how it's laid out, and so we really don't feel shorted by not having enough storage space in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Some people have certain size trays they want to make sure they can fit in because of certain things they make, or they like to have things sit on a tray in the refrigerator. So sometimes we're bringing those trays or having them measured to then when we go to the appliance showroom to measure all that out.
We've had people show up with their pizza box, their favorite frozen pizza, to make sure it fits in the drawer. And so one more thing about the refrigerators is they come, you know, standard depth, counter depth, built in or integrated, and all four of those are different. They mean different things. So Diane just brought up the interior volume of difference, and when you go for an integrated or a built in, those have more space in them than a standard. Just depends on which refrigerator, which line that you're looking at. So,
yeah. So there's so many things to think about in the kitchen, and we will probably definitely get some more interesting topics to delve to even deeper.
I think
kitchens.
We'll do appliances, and we got to do plumbing. So, yeah.
And cabinets.
Thank you.
All right.
Listening.
Well, we'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio, and together, partners at Amity Kett.